Hello, everybody, and welcome to Super Podcast Action Committee, episode 69, the episode number that you can write your own joke for, I'm sure. Andrew Eisen here, along with E. Zachary Knight. Hi, Zachary.
Hello, Andrew. How are you doing?
Not too bad that I'm almost done with Pokemon Rumble U. I'm pretty much done with it. There's, I'm having to kind of fudge it a bit because I can't totally complete the game by myself. There are just a couple challenges in the game that you really can't do by yourself. Some of them you can kind of fake. If you have enough Wii remotes, you can, you know, kind of trick the computer into thinking there's more players and just leave them idle. Because there are a couple challenges that are like, the best one I can give you an example is like, defeat this this battle using less than 20 moves, and that goes for that goes for all four players total. There are cannons that you can jump in and shoot your Pokemon across the field to damage enemies, and that's what it wants you to do, but you can't tell the computer controlled players to do that, and they'll basically slam on the A button. So I have two Wii remotes, so I can have players 2 and 3 be idle and use a very low-powered Pokemon for player 4 and hope it dies, in Pokemon parlance, it's faint, before it does too many moves. But there are other things where it's like, you know, destroy 27 of these little capsule cages inside of 30 seconds. Well, that's impossible to do by yourself. You have to divide and conquer, and the computer does not play nice. So that I think is impossible to do by yourself. So I can't.
So you don't have any friends to bring over for one night to help?
Well, yeah, but no one will. It's like, hey, Nahid, want to come over and play Pokemon Rumble U? And she's like, hell no. No, I do not want to come over and play Pokemon Rumble U. Your Pokemons, do not show them to me. Like,
nice.
You want to go out for sushi? Yeah, let's go out for sushi. And we go out for sushi. So, if the game was online, I probably know enough people in the world, or at least maybe could find some people playing Pokemon that, you know, like in the Monster Hunter community, you can always find someone who's like, hey, I'm grinding for Rathalos plates or, you know, rubies or something like that. Anyone want to go on this thing to help me? Yeah, fine. There's probably would be that community in Pokemon, except the game's not online, so. Yeah. And it seems like kind of a very simple online game to get online. I mean, you just jam on the A button. It's not a very complicated thing to throw over the internet, I wouldn't think. But you know, I'm browsing Game Facts and some other boards to figure out what the challenges in the last handful of levels I haven't unlocked, because I can't get all the Pokemon or complete all the challenges because I only have one player. So I'll finish it today, filling out the rest of the guide. And Some of the challenges are just unfair. Like, some of the challenges start out as question marks, and it only tells you what it is when you've done it, which is okay.
Interesting.
For something like, you know, destroy 5 rockets. Well, okay, you could conceivably do that by yourself, but, you know, without, you know, really that as a goal. But one of them was use this specific Pokemon. It's like, there's 649 of them. What are the odds that I use that specific Pokemon? I had to look that one up online. That's just not fair. And there's a couple others where it's like, use a genderless Pokemon. There is nothing in the game itself that tells you which ones are gendered and which are not. I had to look up a Pokedex online. That's not fair.
Well, I do remember seeing, like, some my son has a few Pokemon cards, and there's some. Most of the Pokemon are genderless, or at least, you know, they don't specify one. But there are a few where there are a male and a female, and they have different abilities. So.
Oh yeah, if you're totally into Pokemon, this is stuff you would probably know off the back of your the back of your hand, off the top of your head, and that's what I was going for. But me, I can identify Pikachu when I see him, but that's about it. So I had to, and the game itself does not tell you which ones are gendered. There's another challenge that's like, use an uncommon Pokemon. I don't even know what that means. I looked up the Pokedex again, and it doesn't, they don't seem to have any rarity ratings or anything like that. I just happened to luck into completing that challenge, and I just wrote in the guide, well, I was using Infernape when I completed this challenge, so I guess that one's uncommon.
Interesting.
So, the names are pretty funny. I am actually a lot more familiar with the Pokemon now than I ever have been, and I'm sick to death. Absolutely sick to death of them. other than that, I've been playing a point-and-click adventure game called Runaway. It's a game series, I think there's three of them, that I've had my eye on for a while just because they're very bright and cartoony looking. They've got a nice style and animations fluidity to them. But the reviews haven't been great. They've been like, eh, it's okay. And, well, the reviews are right. It's okay. It's not bad. It's just not very good. And it suffers from, it kind of like Pokemon Rumble U, suffers from some really poor design decisions where it's like, did anyone play this? You know, use this specific Pokemon. It's like, great. Would be nice if there was a way to actually sort the 649 Pokemon so you wouldn't have to single step through them one by one to find it. Arg. So, yeah. You know, weird stuff like that. So how's your week been, Zachary?
Okay. It's been all right. I've been sick since Friday. Well, I guess Thursday. I wasn't feeling very well at work on Thursday, and then stayed home on Friday, and I've been all right all weekend, but the baby got sick, and so yeah, it's been one of those weekends, but yeah, I have gotten to play some video games, which is always good. You know, I've been continuing playing Final Fantasy IX. I'm on disc 4 finally. I got there this morning. And boy, disc 3 was a long disc. but yeah, that's been a fun game. And really that's all I've been able to play. I've been other than that I've been reading. And I've been reading a book called Little Brother by Cory Doctorow. And I got this off the latest Humble ebook bundle. Mm-hmm. And so I finished I finished The Last Unicorn about 2 weeks ago, and been reading Little Brother since, and it's a pretty good book. It's it takes place in the years following 9/11, you know, with the, you know, how we have the TSA and the NSA and all that spying going on and everything, and the book takes place in San Francisco after a terrorist blows up the Bay, which not the Golden Gate, but the other bridge there. I think it was the Bay Bridge or something like that. But you know, not the spectacle bridge, but the one that people actually use apparently. So terrorists blow that up, and the train tunnel that goes under the bay, and then it follows the story of a kid who was in the wrong place at the wrong time, doing the wrong thing, and got picked up by the military, interrogated for 5 days, and then dumped back in the city, you know, and so he's just on a personal revenge quest against the DHS and their increasingly ever-present security state, you know, where they're putting cameras on every 50 feet, and you know, tracking your credit card purchases and everything like that. So, so yeah, it's pretty interesting. You know, it's just basically, the extreme of where we could be headed if we let the government continue in the path that it's going after, you know, as it's been after 9/11.
I know. So, I mean,
very interesting book.
One day you might see kids being locked up in jail for saying something stupid on social media.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you got that, and you know, it's like one of the things that happened in this, the kid has a bus pass, or like a bus/subway pass, and he uses that to go to school and go to his hangouts and stuff, and he was doing some running some discs out, encrypted video game firmware, where they could flash the latest Xbox console that they had, and put this secure OS on it, and he was handing those discs out all over town, and he got stopped by the cops because they had flagged his movements as suspicious, and that got his mom ticked off at the cops, and it was a pretty funny part, but it's pretty scary book, I it's along the same lines as Pirate Cinema, which I got in the first Humble ebook bundle, where Pirate Cinema was all about the extremes of copyright enforcement. This one is all about the extremes of terrorist surveillance, and so very good books, it's just books to make you think. I like them.
Cool. Well, speaking of Humble Bundle, a little behind-the-scenes story for you folks. This week we had the What Do You Think of the Humble Bundle These Days poll. I was originally going to run that poll last week, but the release date for Xbox One came out, and I thought, let's go with the Console Wars type of poll. Now that we know when both the new PlayStation and Xbox come out, let's see what everyone thinks of who's going to win the holiday. So I pushed that poll to this week, and I wrote the poll on Tuesday asking what you guys think of the Humble Bundle, because there's been a bit of consternation over Humble Bundle recently in that it seems to have lost its way. It started out highlighting indie games and doing a real cross-platform, DRM-free indie games. That seemed to be what they were going for, and they've been branching out into other things with the ebook bundle and a comedy bundle and a music bundle, but they've also been doing really big publisher bundles, like most notably EA and Deep Silver and THQ, which have done well, but they've also been not DRM free. There have been several Steam only sales, and they have
and the Origin only sale
and the Origin only sale. and the not as cross-platform. They're all Windows games, but the few of them are Mac, and even fewer, if any, are Linux. So I thought a poll. What do you guys think of the Humble Bundle? Is it losing its way? Is it losing its way? Is it still awesome? What do you think? So I wrote that on Tuesday. The following day, Humble Indie Bundle 9 hits, which is all indie games, DRM free. All Windows, Mac, Linux. I'm like, thanks, Humble. That was timely. So, these things kind of work out that way sometimes. But poll this week, what do you think of the Humble Bundle These Days? 404 people offered their lovely opinions, and 10% said it's lost its way. 45%, which is the most responded to, says it still offers great deals. I love it. 27% says, it's hit or miss. And 17% says, I don't care, I don't buy Humble Bundles. So, what is your opinion, Zachary? If you read Random Tower, you already know what Zachary's opinion is, but if you don't, here it is now.
Oh, I put that it's lost its way. And while the core numbered bundles, still offer the... the DRM-free and cross-platform, they're way outnumbered by all the alternative bundles that that are for the lately, the vast majority of them have pretty much zero to do with the original vision of the Humble Indie Bundle as they originally advertised it. Now, so, you know, recently we've had, you know, the Humble Origin Bundle, which was a bunch of games only on Origin, you know, which apparently people were willing to go for because all the money was going to charity rather than EA, but people are still willing to sign their life over to EA for some reason. And then, you know, then we have all these Humble Weekly sales, you know, like, you know, take the one that's going on right now, the Retro Shooters. You know, you've got, see, one, two, three games that are available on Mac, two of which are available on Linux, but they all require Steam in order to play. And you know, and that's one of those things that just really bugs the crap out of me. Because while Steam is now available for Linux, you know, it's not something I use regularly. You know, I bought these Humble Bundles because I like to just download the executable straight off the website and or straight off the servers using torrents or whatever and then just install them on my computer. But, you know, I don't really want to have to run Steam, you know, because it's just not something I'm interested in. And so, you know, it's just, you know, it's, you know, and, it, you know, I see more and more of that. You know, and so, you know, it was about a month or so ago that, you know, GOG was teasing the Humble Bundle about not being DRM free or about the Humble Bundle not being DRM free. And so yeah, I agreed with them and, you know, I wish that, you know, the Humble Bundle would offer more bundles that are cross platform, that are DRM free rather than what they have been doing.
Mm-hmm. So, I wonder
So what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, my thoughts are I am kind of stuck between the first three options. It's lost its way. It still offers great deals. I love it. And it's hit or miss. I kind of have all three of those opinions. I went with it still offers great deals. I love it. I think that's closest because that's just closest. Some of the Humble Bundles, I'm like, ooh, that's lovely. I actually bought Indie Bundle 9 because there's actually a lot of games in there I'd like to play. The FTL, thank you. I keep hearing a lot about, and everyone's saying how awesome it is, and now I'll finally find out. Mm-hmm. Fez, apparently, people really like, and Phil Fish had been in the news a lot, and I can't say I've ever been enamored by the man, but apparently the game is great, so now I'll get to try that out. But I think this is the first Humble Bundle in quite a while I've purchased. So a lot of the recent bundles, while I appreciate them, I'm glad they're there for the people that want them. I mean, even the Origin Bundle, there's some great games in there, and if you don't mind Origin at all, that's a great deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an advertisement for Origin, and it's a plan by EA to get you to use their platform because, you know, the first one's always free. you know, it is kind of sad to see them, you know, start out with something cool. It's like, you know, let's bring you these games that you probably otherwise never would have heard of, you know, put them out in a big public spotlight and, you know, give them the attention they deserve. You know, they're cross-platform, so everyone can play them. They're DRM-free, so, you know, even if, you know, so you don't have to worry about some digital distribution platform going belly up in 10 years and you can no longer play your games. That's great. And they have moved away from that a little bit. Well, maybe not moved away from that so much as just broadened their horizons, because they're still doing the indie bundles, but you know, I look at some of the bigger bundles, the big publisher bundles, and I wonder, is it not cross-platform and DRM-free because they can't get it to be that? I mean, you can't offer a game on Linux if the original developer never actually programmed a Linux version. So you wonder if they're kind of stuck in some places, or...
Yeah, I can understand them being that way, but, you know, it seems like a lot of these are just, you know, or some of these are, you know, seem like they're just they're just like that because, you know, they're Steam only because that's the way the publisher wants. And apparently, you know, the Humble Bundle guys, you know, they based on the things that I've read, you know, they're branching out to these bigger name companies, you know, to basically get more people coming to the Humble Bundle, you know, because it seems like they're trying to turn it into more of a platform rather than a occasional deal. You know, they want, you know, with especially with these Humble Weekly sales now, you know, it seems like, yes, they're turning this into a platform. And so it's not just advertising for, you know, the bundles, but also for, you know, they offer a service called the Humble Store for indie developers. So if indie developers want to sell their game on their own website, they basically use the Humble Bundle's APIs, like their merchant accounts and everything, and sell everything. Or they handle the payment process for you. They handle the hosting of the game service or the game for you, so that people can download it. And so, you know, it seems like it's a deal that you know they're trying to build up enough so that they can bring in revenue through those alternative means that don't get the spotlight as much. And while I can applaud them for that, and I like, you know, I like that they're, you know, they're going for expanding and everything, but it just seems like they're you know, to me, they're going about it in the wrong way. Just because, you know, because the thing that drew a lot of people into the Humble Bundle was the fact that it was DRM free, mm-hmm. was the fact that it was cross platform. You know, it was the charity aspect. All three of those, you know, together were what, you know, and the pay what you want. Mm-hmm. You know, it was all that together that brought people in. And while, you know, these other bundles are, you know, bringing people in to buy certain games like the Origin bundles and stuff, how many of those people are going to return? You know, they sold, what, like over 2 million bundles with the Origin bundle? You know, they rarely get anything. They rarely hit over a million. You know, so you know the vast majority of those people aren't coming back to the Humble Bundle later on, you know. Pretty much all of them went there just to get those games, and they're gone now. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So you know, I don't see how that helps the Humble Bundle in the long term. You know, while it helps them in the short term, it's not going to help them very much in the long term.
Here's an interesting perspective by BMO, who's one of our commenters on Game Politics. He or she says, "It's a cool thing, but I hate the slightly self-important marketing, particularly the toe-curlingly cringeworthy name." I don't know what that means. I guess the Humble Bundle is kind of... Do you think Humble Bundle is really humble?
I think, I think at the beginning they were. I'm pretty sure they still are. You know, they are a little bit bigger now. You know, they're a little more important. Mm-hmm. But you know, the Humble Bundle, the name came about because it was just a bunch of indies, you know, just saying, hey, you know, come over and buy our stuff, you know, and you can help us out, help out these charities. You know, they were pretty humble about it. But, you know, as things move on, you know, things get a little carried away, and I guess they're getting a little carried away too. But I don't see the name as cringeworthy. Yeah, so
I just find it hard to say depending on the bundle. You know, the Humble eBook bundle. I mean, spitting some of them out can be kind of difficult, but
yeah, I can understand that. You know, because we've got. You know, everything has Humble in front of it, mm-hmm. and generally Bundle in there too. I think from now on, I'm probably just going to be limiting myself to the numbered bundles, mm-hmm. and probably the Android bundles too, and ebook bundles. But those are the three that I think are generally the best values. You know, if you don't have an Android phone, then you can't really get much out of the Android or bundles. But the ebook bundles are still pretty good because, you know, you get some really good books in there. So,
okay,
yeah, but I'm probably not going to be buying very many of the alternative bundles.
Okay. All right. Well, some more topics for the. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk about the family sharing program that Valve invented and is the most awesome thing ever. If only someone else would have thought of that first, they could have raked in buku bucks. Later, we'll talk about Fox News and their doctor on hand, Keith Abloh, who they go to talk about video game violence and how it affects people that he's never talked to. So, yes. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fun. So, quick break, and yep. We will be right back. We are back. So I was jesting a bit there. Valve did not make up the family Steam plan. Microsoft beat them to it and then changed its mind. So yeah, Microsoft way back before the multiple 180s, it's spun in many, many circles. There were so many 180s. One of the things about the only thing that was good about the initial Xbox One reveal was this family sharing plan that it had, in that you could, anyone in your house could play any games on your Xbox console without logging into your account. Well, okay, I should certainly hope that I could play any games in the library sitting next to me. But it went further in saying that you could designate 10 family members, and they didn't have to be family members. Microsoft wasn't going to do background checks or anything. You could designate 10 other people. Yeah, we would hope not. 10 other people as family members. You designate them as family members, and these 10 people could access your library. And since all games on discs had to be installed anyway, that meant that, you know, Brother Joe, who lives across the country, could play game, you know, as a family member, could play games in your library. And yeah, that is pretty neat. Unfortunately, that got buried under all of the awful, awful, awful DRM policies and other crap that it had come out with, and no one really paid attention to that. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just, yes, family sharing is cool, but my goodness, you can't do anything with used games. You can only, you know, you can only give a game to a person once if they're in your friends list, and only 30 days after they've been in your friends list. There were restrictions on renting and lending and used games and this and that and the other thing, and there was a lot of potential for some really horrible consumer unfriendly stuff, and people didn't like that. And then Microsoft 180'd all that and said, oh yeah, family sharing, we're taking that off the table too, because nanny goat's on you. Yeah, if you don't like it, we're taking it all back. So there, even the good stuff that you would have liked, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. So fast forward to today, and Valve says, hey, look, we're doing a family sharing plan. And gamers go, ah, and the lights shine down from heaven onto Valve headquarters in whatever state it happens to be in. And, you know, the world rejoices.
Washington.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Are they in Redmond with everyone else?
Yes.
Oh, my
God. Yeah, they're in Redmond.
Must be really good donut shops up there or something. Or maybe sales tax stuff? I don't know.
No, there's no income tax in Washington.
That might have something to do with it. Okay, yeah. So Valve does a family sharing plan, and if you read stuff like the video game portal in Reddit or ICANN has Cheeseburger or FARC, you will probably find people going, oh, so it's okay when Valve does it, but when Microsoft does it, they're the most evil pond scum to infest the earth and ruin every gamer's life. Yes, it's funny. It makes for a great demotivational poster or whatever, but no, that's not what anyone is saying. No one had a problem with Microsoft's family sharing plan. everyone is really in agreement that the family sharing plan was pretty damn cool. It was everything else
yeah, it was
that
a good
we
idea.
Hated. So Valve comes out with the family sharing plan, and it says, "Our customers have expressed a desire to share their digital games among friends and family members, just as current retail games, books, DVDs, and other physical media can be shared. Family sharing was created in direct response to these user requests." Now, did they rip off Microsoft? No, this has probably been in the works a lot longer than 5 months. So beta starts in a week, and Valve's family sharing plan, as I understand it, is not quite as robust as Microsoft's plan would have been. This plan, as I understand it, and their wording is a little odd. You're essentially lending your entire digital library to a friend. Not just one game out of the library, the entire thing. And your friend can play games in this library until you want to play a game. As soon as you play a game, not just the one that your friend happens to be playing, any game in your library, your friend gets a notice that says, if you want to keep playing, you have to buy the game. If not, sawed off until the owner of this account is done playing. So, a lot more limited than Microsoft's family sharing plan was, but I don't know. What do you think of it, Zachary?
I think it's pretty neat. The limiting factor is what I think is going to be the hurdle that's going to have to jump to get people to actually adopt this. Because right now you can install your Steam account onto any computer you want and, you know, install your games on those computers and then put Steam into offline mode. And you can play, you know, like you can be playing in your office on your laptop and your wife be on the desktop playing a different game and everything's all nice and happy. But with this one, you have to be connected to Steam. There's no offline mode when you're borrowing someone's game. Mm-hmm. And there apparently there's no offline mode when somebody's borrowing your game. And so once you start playing, you know, they're going to be kicked off. And I can understand where Valve's coming from with this, you know, because they're wanting to be able to, you know, move from, you know, a family sharing one Steam account to multiple Steam accounts, you know, borrowing games and saying, "Ooh, I like this game that I've been playing, so I'm going to go and buy it for my Steam account, and I can continue where I left off when I was borrowing it." You know, harkening back to the days of, you know, local saves and stuff, you know, memory cards on your PlayStation, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, all that's pretty neat, but I just can't get over the idea of, you know, having to lend out the entire library of games to one other person so they can play one game. You know, if this was just, you know, if, you know, I could, you know, let somebody play my, you know, my copy of whatever while I'm playing some other game, you know, that would be kind of neat. But I guess they're trying to get away from the idea that, you know, say I've got 300 games in my library and I'm only playing five of them. You know, it's like, you know, what am I doing with the other 295 games? Well, here, I'll connect, you know, a couple dozen of my family and let them play these other 295 games that I'm not playing. You know, they're trying. I think they're trying to avoid that kind of situation.
I think where they'll be moving is you'll be able to sell those games to your friends or family.
See, that would be pretty neat. You know, let Valve get a little cut and, you know, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. just because they're handling it. But yeah, you know, that could be an interesting way they're going. And if they play it right, you know, that could be actually a good feature because there are a lot of people who have bought a lot of games over time that they don't play. And I'm sure they would be happy to hand off a bunch of them. Yeah, but they don't want to have to get rid of their entire account to do so.
Mm-hmm. Hey, want to hear something off-topic and really gross?
Okay.
So the last couple of weeks I've been complaining about how intolerably hot it is in here. I just noticed that I have a wood chair that I sit in, and I just noticed that the back of my wood chair is covered in a mixture of Andrew slime and the black shirt that I'm wearing. So I was sweating so much that part of my shirt has now become one with the back of my chair. And I can kind of scratch it off with my thumbnail, and it's really disgusting. I may have to burn this chair.
Lovely.
But anyway, back to Valve. Yeah, I think it's, as with everything that Valve does with its Steam platform, I think this is just the beginning. I don't think, you know, you may look at this and say, well, that's a little on the limited side, wouldn't you say? And, well, yeah, but you have to remember, when Steam started 5, 6, 7 years ago, however long ago it was, it sucked. you know, it took a while.
I think it was 10 years ago.
At 90, or 04, I think it was. Something like that.
So,
yeah, I mean, it was struggling in the beginning. It took years. I mean, think of Xbox Live. I mean, that's the standard now. But when Xbox Live first started, it was crap. Which is funny, because 10 years later, that's where Nintendo is. It's like, weren't you paying attention? They're like, man, this HD stuff is hard. This online stuff is hard. It's like, everyone already made these mistakes for you. Learn from them. It's like, wow. Anyway, also, one thing I want to point out, because a lot of people like to compare Xbox One with the Steam platform, is it's kind of an apples and oranges thing. The Xbox One is a video game console. The Valve Steam is a digital distribution platform. It can be played offline, and from what I've read, sometimes that kind of fails. But it's a digital distribution platform. You have to be online to browse, and, well, not if it's cached, you can browse it, but you have to be online to go to the store and buy stuff. So it's not really, that's the only way you can get games off of a digital distribution platform, is to connect to it. With the Xbox One, it's a video game, as of right now anyway, it's a video game console that you can go to Walmart, buy a disc, put it in, and play the game. At no point here is there a requirement to connect online, unless I want to take advantage of playing online, leaderboards, DLC, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a difference between a console and a digital distribution platform, and as such, I think they are rightfully held slightly different standards. That said, on paper, Microsoft's family sharing plan was better, but Microsoft took its ball and went home. And that's really the sad thing, is a lot of the people popped out of the woodwork saying, "Oh, I always liked the Xbox One DRM. You're clipping the future of what consoles can be." It's like, not really. We all liked family sharing. Microsoft did not have to get rid of family sharing.
Yeah, they didn't. There was no reason.
Yeah, there was nothing about its DRM that there's nothing about any of their other stupid requirements that family sharing hinged on. Microsoft could still do family sharing. Now, granted, in order to do family sharing, you would have to be online. So it could be something you could opt into. If family sharing is something that appeals to you, you can have it. You just have to stay online, and we're going to check every 24 hours to make sure you are online. Sound fair? No? Okay, then no family sharing for you, but it's available there for people who want it. You know, Microsoft didn't have to take its ball and go home. And I imagine it'll come back to the Foursquare court at some point. Where am I coming up with these stupid analogies? But I'm sure it will be back with family sharing at some point. Hopefully not with any of the other crap, because the other crap was crap, and no one likes crap.
Yeah.
Do you like crap? Hopefully. No, of course you don't. Who would?
Not at all.
Okay, yeah. So we've exhausted that one. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about everyone's favorite news source, Fox News. They're fair and balanced, don't you know? All right, back in a moment. We are back. Did you miss us? Wonderful. Don't bother answering. Can't hear you. So, Fox News. I feel sometimes I'm being unfair towards Fox News because I don't routinely read or watch Fox News. The only time I ever do is when it's linked from a news source that I do read, like Game Politics. And it's always something, oh, for crying out loud, look at what Fox News said this time. So maybe I only ever read the crap at Fox News. Maybe it's a really excellent... probably not. It probably just sucks. Anyway, Fox News has had a fun week of talking about violent video games and their supposed effects on us gamers. And they have on their medical A-team one Dr. Keith Ablo. Who, I guess he's on their payroll. He's some type of psychiatrist. And he thinks that video games are exactly like drugs. He actually says that they are as toxic as drugs and can hook you just like cocaine. And there should be a Surgeon General's warning on video games. Even if they don't affect you... you personally, they do affect some people, and that's good enough. I suppose it's kind of like a jar of peanut butter. It's like there's a couple people allergic to peanuts, so we should put it on the peanut butter jar that, you know, contains nuts. Eat at your own risk. I guess that's where he's coming from. But so the Fox News is talking about the Fox News, fair and balanced, by the way. Which means that we only hear from this guy. They never seem to talk to anyone from the other side of the conversation, researchers like Cheryl Olson or Chris Ferguson. Chris? Craig? Chris. I think it's Chris. No game developers, no gamers, no one from ESA or ECA, just people who don't play video games, psychiatrists who have never talked to any of the people that they're talking about, and it doesn't strike me as very fair and balanced, but maybe I should read more Fox News to see. In this latest thing, they're saying that they make a list of a lot of school shooters, the Columbine shooters, the Virginia Tech, the Tucson shooting, the Aurora, Colorado theater shooting, and the Sandy Hook shooting. And they say all of these people were addicted to violent video games. And then they talk to Dr. Keith Ablo, who says that, yes, these games are addictive and they make crazy people even more crazy and go out and shoot people. You see, because drugs don't affect everyone that takes drugs. I don't take drugs, so I have no idea if that's true or not. But whatever you think of what the guy's saying about how, you know, there's 100, and, you know, studies of 130,000 people. I think he's combining every single study ever done, show that playing violent video games increases aggression and decreases empathy, which is not what every single study says. None of the studies have shown that the increases and decreases were large enough to be of any type of concern, if they even measure what the increase or decrease is. And increased aggression and decreased empathy doesn't mean go out and shoot people anyway. So regardless of what he's saying about this, they're starting with a false premise that all of these school and other place shooters were obsessed and addictive players of violent video games. For example, the Columbine kids, they they did play Doom. You can go online and actually find some custom maps that they made of Doom. There's this urban legend, like, oh, they made a map of their school in Doom to practice. No, they didn't. The maps exist. You can find them online. No, they didn't. So they did play Doom. They probably played other games, but no evidence to suggest that they were actually addicted. Virginia Tech shooter. There was little evidence that he was much of a gamer at all, let alone addicted to violent video games. His roommates say they never saw him gaming. In fact, the only time gaming ever came up was the Washington Post said his mom hoped that in this new college he would, you know, make friends instead of playing video games and basketball by himself. That's it. Someone apparently, I think it was New York Times or someone, had interviewed an old high school classmate who said he used to play Counter-Strike. Great. But again,
there was something like that, but even that Counter-Strike thing was removed from that report.
Yeah, the Times or whoever, ended up redacting it. It ended up removing it from the report. Said it's not relevant to anything.
Yeah, which is interesting because this article on Fox News states that as fact, and it's why would they be listing the Washington Post as the source rather than the official federal investigation of the Virginia Tech shooting, which concluded that the only video game they can actually figure – the only video game they can conclusively say he played was Sonic the Hedgehog. Mm-hmm. They couldn't prove that he played any other video game. And it's just like, okay, where's Counter-Strike from? Where'd they get that?
Yeah. So the Tucson shooter, there was an interview in a paper with a former classmate – who had called him a big gamer. That's all I could find. That's the only thing that ever related this guy to gaming. The Norway guy, he had this like 50-page manifesto. If you've read it, it makes no sense because the guy's kind of crazy. but he does briefly mention that he played World of Warcraft and he did use Call of Duty to train. It's not much more than a footnote in a very long and rambling manifesto, but again, there's nothing really. He's obsessive, addicted to it. No. The Aurora Theater shooting. Someone mentioned he played World of Warcraft. Okay, Sandy Hook. there's no evidence. A UK tabloid interviewed a plumber who said he saw a poster of tanks, and he said, "Oh, these kids love military stuff, and they could name all this stuff just like kids who play Call of Duty." That's it. Months later, there was the police report that listed all the stuff they took out of his house, which included 3 video game consoles and no video games. But it did mention they interviewed someone who said that the shooter was a recluse who played Call of Duty. Could have been the plumber. I don't know if it's the same person or not, but I also don't know how this person knew what the shooter was playing if he was a recluse who stayed in his house and never talked to anybody. Maybe they were playing with him online. But the point is that they talk about, they're like Columbine, Virginia Tech, Norway, Aurora, Sandy Hook. They list all, they were all, no, they weren't. They not only were, is there no evidence that these people were addicted to violent video games, there is almost no evidence to suggest they were much into games in the first place. So bothers me.
Yeah. But, I do remember picking up a book, a couple of books actually about, the Columbine shooters and I just kind of thumbed through them cause I was at the library and I was looking for any reference to video games and stuff. And they were, mostly just mentioned in passing, it's like, they liked violent, they liked violent media, and mentioned a couple of games they did, but and these were books based on the official investigations. These weren't tabloid level books or anything. These were official, on the record type things, and it's like nothing in the official investigation of the Columbine shooters, stated video games as anything that had to do with the shooting. You know, same with the Virginia Tech shooting and pretty much every other shooting that's ever happened. You know, video games are just a footnote. And it's honestly, that's the way it's going to be because, with the number of people who play video games, the exact same video games as these people supposedly played and probably for a lot longer, you would think if they were the problem, we would have a lot more shooters. And we don't, and I don't, I honestly don't think that, that's any statement one way or the other. It's just a fact, even long-term critics like Jack Thompson, will admit that violent video games aren't going to turn a normal sane person into a shooter. He always likes to claim that it's the tipping point for those people with mental problems that would lead to this. Mm-hmm. But why video games should be singled out as that one ignition source rather than the thousands of other potential ignition sources is beyond me.
Well, that's true. There have been cases of people doing very, very bad things where other forms of media have been directly blamed for influencing the bad thing. Books, movies, Catcher in the Rye was one that apparently influenced someone to do horrible things. The Columbine thing, I think they started drawing influences from Basketball Diaries, which is really lousy Leonardo DiCaprio film from mid-90s, which I had to watch because my sister really, really liked Leonardo DiCaprio. Which is the only reason I watched that movie, and it was terrible. But, So, rock music videos. You have to wonder, Keith Ablo, so far as I've seen, he doesn't seem to be proposing that we ban video games, just that we put some sort of label on them. And only video games, not books, movies, music, anything else, just video games. I don't know what this label is supposed to say. Is it supposed to say, warning, if you're psychotic, playing this game isn't going to help?
Maybe he's a fan of Joe Baca's video game labeling bill, where you put a big old label on there that says, warning, violent video games have been proven to cause increases in aggression, or something stupid like that. And honestly, throw all the labels you want on video games, it's not going to make a lick of difference.
People
are still
going
to play them, and you're still going to have shooters. As sad as it is to say, people are still going to kill people, and no amount of labeling video games, no amount of banning video games are going to make a difference. That's just the way we are right now. That's the way society is.
See, occasionally we get an alien popping down like Michael Rainey, who comes down and he says, you humans are really evil and you hurt one another and you start wars and murders and stuff. If you don't shape up, we're going to kill all of you. And it's like, sir, don't you see the irony or hypocrisy here? No. I've always loved that movie. Day the Earth Stood Still, the original one with Michael Rainey. It's classic. Watch it.
Mm-hmm. That was a very good movie, yes.
Yeah, I didn't see the one with Keanu Reeves, I think.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one either. I'm like, I watched the original. I don't want to sully, I don't want to spoil the greatness of it.
I heard it was okay. I heard the character was, was supposed to be very somber and emotionless and monotone, and Keanu Reeves is great at that. So, one of the things that stuck with me is Keith Ablo said was, I'm not saying that video games affect every single person, just like drugs don't affect every single person. But I've never heard of anyone really suggest that everyone who does drugs goes out and kills people, or that snorting cocaine actually makes you shoot a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if the parallels he's drawing there are correct either. Then again, I know absolute zero about drugs. Not my area of expertise, so... But he did come out with a gem towards the end of a five-minute interview he had on Fox News where he says that mass shootings are concerned, guns are completely irrelevant. And I was like, do you mean guns aren't what we should be blaming? We should be blaming the people? I would hope that's what you mean, because guns seem to be... at least somewhat relevant to a shooting, much like a car is relevant to a car accident. I mean, with the exception of, you know, mechanical failure or something like that, you don't blame a car for a car accident. You blame the person driving. Maybe he just phrased that one kind of weird, but in the context of the rest of the video, it really felt like, hell no, guns have nothing to do, you know, we shouldn't be talking about gun control or, you know... gun safety
Fox
or
News,
anything.
So.
Yeah, fair and balanced. No, it's video games that we need to focus on. I'm like, really?
Yeah, because this is, you know, it is Fox News, so, you know, they've got to, stand up for the NRA and stuff, which, you know, and the Second Amendment, which, you know, I'm fine with. Yeah. You know, I think the Second Amendment is a great amendment, and we all have the right to self-defense.
Sure.
But, you know... Fox News has a tendency to attack the First Amendment when it comes to anything that's not Fox News. And so that's why they're attacking video games.
Yeah.
Because, you know, apparently they don't seem to think video games are deserving of the same First Amendment protection as Fox News is. Which is kind of sad because Fox News won the right in court to lie to people.
One thing that... Abloh said that really did stick in my craw was when he was talking about the insanity of the shooters in Norway and Sandy Hook and Columbine and how mentally disturbed these people must absolutely be. He talked about the kid in Slaughter, Louisiana, who shot his grandma, the 8-year-old. And he grouped them in, saying that this kid was mentally disturbed too. That this kid was, you know, crazy. Somewhat implying that the, you know, Grand Theft Auto 4 drove him nuts, or maybe he was crazy to begin with. But it's like, dude, you work for a news station, right? Have you read the news? It was an accident. I mean, although, you know, if you read the official, the initial reports, the police were like, we think this is a homicide. And then two or three days later, the judge said, no, it was a kid playing with a gun. And he shot his grandma. And that's it's tragic, it's horrible, it's sad, but unfortunately stuff like that happens. And the questions you need to ask are, where'd he get a loaded gun? I mean, was it just sitting out on a table somewhere? I mean, what was this gun secure? Was it loaded? Was this kid taught proper respect and safety of firearms since they're in the house? You know, those I think are the important questions, and the only ones who asked them were the neighbors, not the police, not the news media, just the neighbors. So, Mr. Abloh, if you're listening to this, that kid wasn't. There's no evidence that the kid was disturbed or crazy. He's just 8 years old.
Yeah, that seems to be a little far-reaching, and you got to kind of question his medical credentials if he's making those kind of statements about somebody he's never met, never talked to, and only heard about in the media.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think, but I could have sworn I remember hearing something about. A similar situation where somebody's medical or legal credentials were being questioned because of similar things, but it's escaping me. But it just sounds
Phil,
familiar.
What are you a doctor of? That is our show for today. Thank you very much for listening. And now it's time to plug our stuffs. So I will go first. My name is Andrew Eisen, E-I-S-E-N. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew Eisen. Type Andrew Eisen into a YouTube search engine and you'll find all my videos, including my most recent one, which I've been talking about for weeks and finally got around to actually doing. It's called Guns Don't Kill People. Licensed Guns in Video Games Do. This is based on that letter that the Connecticut speaker, the speaker of the Connecticut House of Representatives, wrote to the video game industry a month ago, chastising them for entering into licensing deals with gun manufacturers to feature guns with real names and likenesses in their games, suggesting that such a thing is, at the very least, precipitates shootings and massacres, if not directly responsible for them. So I poke fun at that. So guns don't kill people. Licensed guns and video games do. Look for it online. Watch it. Enjoy it. Tell me what you think. That's it for me. Zachary, plug away.
All right. You can follow me on Twitter at EZKnight. And you know, also check out my game development Twitter. That's DK_gaming. That's the feed for my game development stuff over at DivineKnightGaming.com. And you can also check out OKGameDev.com for the latest news in Oklahoma game development. And whenever I have interesting opinions to state about the video games industry, that's at RandomTower.com. Check those out.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks for participating in the poll. We'll have a new one sometime this week. This has been Super Podcast Action Committee, Episode 69. You can send us email at superpackpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at superpackpodcast. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes and like us on Facebook. So, that's it from us. We will see you next week in Episode 70.
See you later.